A formation of six small bright objects fly towards the Enterprise. On the bridge, Spock is in the command chair. Sulu is at the helm, with Chekov beside him.
Do we have maximum magnification, Lieutenant?
Yes, sir.
Kirk comes onto the bridge from the turbo lift and takes the command chair from Spock.
Missile spread, Mr. Spock.
Very archaic type, Captain. Sublight speed.
Aye, and chemically fueled to boot, sir.
Anything on communication, Lieutenant Uhura?
No, sir. All bands clear.
Course of the missile, Mr. Spock?
It would appear that the Enterprise is the target, Captain.
Fair phaser banks 1 and 2, Mr. Sulu.
Aye, sir.
Mr. Chekov, get a fix on the missile's point of origin.
Aye, Captain.
Phasers 1 and 2 locked in and ready, sir.
Kirk stands up.
Fire phasers.
The missiles explode harmlessly.
Mr. Chekov, alter course to the missile's point of origin.
Aye, sir.
Warp factor 3, Mr. Sulu.
Warp factor 3, sir.
In sick bay, McCoy stands belligerently in front of Nurse Chapel.
I am a nurse first, Dr. McCoy, and a member of the crew of the Enterprise second.
You're excused. You may return to your quarters.
No, I'm sorry, Doctor. I have called the captain, and I'll wait until he comes.
What's the emergency?
I said you were excused, nurse.
Please, Christine. I promise you I'll give the captain a full report.
She looks at him, but he avoids her eye. She goes.
That was quite a scene.
I've just completed the standard physical examinations for the entire crew.
Excellent. What's the emergency?
The crew is fit. I found nothing unusual, with one exception.
Serious?
Terminal.
What is it?
Xenopolycythemia. It has no cure.
Who?
He has 1 year to live at the most.
Who is it?
The ship's chief medical officer.
You.
I'll be most effective on the job in the time left if you'll keep this to yourself.
Space, a final frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise. Its 5-year mission. To explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Star Trek, created by Gene Roddenberry, starring William Shatner. Also starring Leonard Nimoy as Mr. Spock and DeForest Kelly as Dr. McCoy. For the World is Hollow and I Have Touched the Sky, written by Rick Voliertz, directed by Tony Leader. Kirk comes back to the bridge.
Captain's log, stardate 5476.3. I have just had the sad duty of informing Starfleet about Dr. McCoy's condition and have requested an immediate replacement.
There's an asteroid on the screen.
Mr. Spock.
Yes, Captain.
Confirm Chekov's coordinates for the missile's point of origin.
Correct, Captain. We are approaching those coordinates.
And that object on the screen?
An asteroid, 200 miles in diameter.
Could the enemy vessel be hiding behind the asteroid?
Negative, Captain. We've had that area on scanners constantly.
Then the asteroid is the missile's point of origin.
Correct, Captain.
Kirk goes up to Spock's station.
Full sensor probe, Mr. Spock.
Typical asteroid chemically, but it is not orbiting. It is pursuing an independent course through this solar system.
How could that be? Unless it's powered. A spaceship?
It is under power, Captain, and correcting for all gravitational stresses.
Source of power?
Atomic, very archaic, leaving a trail of debris and hard radiation.
Mr. Chekov. Plot the course of the asteroid vessel.
Aye, sir.
Asteroid has an outer shell, which is hollow. It surrounds an independent inner core, which has a breathable atmosphere. Sensors read no life forms.
Then it must be on automatic controls.
And the passengers, or builders, are dead.
Course of asteroid, I mean spaceship, 241 Mark 17.
Interesting.
Yes.
The course Ensign Chekhov just gave for the asteroid would put it on a collision course with Darren 5.
Darren 5. Inhabited.
Correct. Population approximately 3,724,000,000, if memory serves me correctly. Estimated time of impact, 396 days.
Mr. Sulu, match Enterprise speed with that of the asteroid vessel. Mr. Spock and I are transporting aboard.
Mr. Scott, you have the comm.
Aye, sir.
In the transporter room, Nurse Chapel hands McCoy the standard landing party equipment. Kirk and Spock arrive.
A lot can happen in a year. Please, give yourself every minute.
Kirk watches McCoy step onto the transporter chamber and stand on a pad.
Dr. McCoy, Mr. Spock and I will handle this. Without me, Jim, you'd never find your way back.
Well, I think it would be wiser if...
I'd like to go. I'm fine, Captain.
All right, Doctor.
If that's what you want.
They join him on the transporter platform. Nurse Chapel waits to see them beam down. They materialize on the asteroid's inner core. Beneath an orange sky, the surface looks just like a bare, rocky planet.
You'd swear you're on the surface of a planet. One fails to see the logic in making a ship look like a planet.
But no, this was a spaceship.
Kirk Enterprise.
Enterprise, Scott here.
Transported without incident, Kirk out.
They pass through a gap between two boulders and see several orange cylinders on the sand ahead of them. Spock takes a scan with his tricorder as they approach. Each cylinder is about 8 foot high and perfectly smooth, with no markings. McCoy also takes a scan.
No apparent opening.
You found no intelligent life forms, Mr. Spock, but surely...
The asteroid ship is over 10,000 years old, Doctor. Still no sign of life forms, Captain.
Two of the cylinders rise to reveal blue inner towers, each with a doorway. Several men burst out and leap on Spock, Kirk, and McCoy, who fight back. A beautiful woman follows the guards out and stands watching the fight imperiously. She and McCoy accidentally make eye contact, and a look passes between them. Three of the guards in their colorful baggy Harlequin uniforms overpower Kirk. Two more pinion Spock by the arms. Another brings their phasers over to the woman, who wears a long golden green dress that leaves one shoulder and part of her torso bare. She looks at the phasers and communicators, and then at Kirk.
These are weapons?
Of a sort. Weapons, communication devices. Let me go to my friend.
McCoy is lying unconscious on the ground. Kirk struggles with his captors. The chestnut-haired woman raises a hand and the guards let him go. He kneels beside McCoy and helps him sit up.
You all right?
I think so.
They get to their feet.
I am Natira, the High Priestess of the people. Welcome to the world of Yonada.
I can't say I think much of your welcome.
Take them.
The guards pick up their swords lost in the fight and hustle Kirk, Spock, and McCoy into one of the shafts. They descend a spiral staircase. At the bottom, a group of men and women dressed in brightly colored and sometimes gaudily patterned clothing watch curiously. Natira steps in front of the three captives and leads them in procession down a corridor towards a door surrounded by triangular with strange markings carved into them. People bow as she passes. At the threshold, she puts her hands high in the air. Spock raises a curious eyebrow as Natira makes an expansive gesture, passing her hands over the hieroglyphs on the panels either side of the doorway. The door slides open. Kirk, Spock, McCoy, and the three guards follow her into a dimly lit chamber.
You will kneel.
The guards push them to their knees. Neytiri stands on a pentagonal dais and faces a tall, dark, monumental slab which has a golden star marked on it. She, too, kneels. Gradually, the lights in the chamber come up.
She called this the world. These people don't know they're on a spaceship.
They've been in flight 10,000 years.
Maybe they don't realize it.
O oracle of the people, most perfect and wise, strangers have come to our world. They bear instruments we do not understand.
A white light comes on in the center of the multi-pointed star. Neytiri, her long, elaborately arranged hair hanging almost to her waist, bows, gets to her feet, and turns to the three Enterprise officers.
Who are you?
They stand.
I am Captain Kirk of the Starship Enterprise. This is my medical officer, Dr. McCoy. My first officer, Mr. Spock.
For what reason do you visit this world?
We come in friendship.
Then learn what it means to be our enemy before you learn what it means to be our friend.
A sparkling green force field wreathes Kirk, Spock, and McCoy, and they fall unconscious to the floor. Kirk looks around.
Spock.
Spock and McCoy are lying on couches.
Dr. McCoy. Bones. Bones.
The doctor must have received an excessively large electrical shock.
No, that's not it.
Nothing else could have caused this, Captain. At least, nothing that has happened here.
You're right, Spock. The shock is serious because of McCoy's weakened condition.
May I ask precisely what is troubling the doctor?
Kirk, sitting beside McCoy, looks up at Spock.
I don't think he would have told you himself. But I think you should know now. It's xenopolycythemia.
Spock nods.
Yes. I know of it, Captain.
Then you know that nothing can be done.
McCoy, lying with the bolster under his head, slowly opens his eyes and puts a hand to his temple.
Bones. How is it?
I'm all right. Are you all right, Mr. Spock?
Very well, Doctor. The captain and I seem to have suffered no ill effects.
Oh, that oracle really got to me. I must be especially susceptible to its magic spells.
He tries to sit up. Spock puts a concerned hand on his arm. McCoy glares.
Spock knows.
McCoy looks at Kirk, assumes a matter-of-fact expression, and gets to his feet.
Well, we better get to the control room.
He puts a hand to his head.
Are you in any condition to get up?
Don't worry, I can make it, chap. Captain, informing these people they are on a ship may be in violation of the prime directive of Starfleet Command.
Well, the people of Yonata may be changed by the knowledge, but it's better than exterminating them.
Logical, Captain.
And the 3 billion on Darren 5.
Also logical, Captain. Gentlemen, I believe we have a visitor.
An elderly man with a kindly, wizened face and a bob of grey hair, wearing a baggy pink, orange and red garment with blue tights, enters through a curtained recess. He bows, produces a small pouch from his belt, tips its contents into his hand, and gives some to each of the three men.
For strength. Many of us have felt the power of our oracle. This has been a benefit.
Tastes like an ancient herb derivative.
The old man puts the pouch back in his belt and looks up at them.
You are not of Yonada.
No, we're from outside your world.
Where is outside?
Up there. Outside, up there, everywhere.
The man gazes at Kirk.
So they say also.
He winces in pain, blinking his eyes.
Many years ago, climb the mountains, even though it is forbidden.
He winces again.
Why is it forbidden?
I am not sure.
He touches the side of his face.
But things are not as they teach us. For the world is hollow, and I have touched the sky.
He puts both hands to his temples and collapses to the floor.
What is it about? Something under the skin.
Something briefly glows red on his temple, then vanishes. McCoy feels for his pulse.
He's dead. Well, the world is hollow, and I have touched the sky.
He said it was forbidden to climb the mountains.
Yes, of course it is. Because if you did, you'd touch the sky and find out that you were living on a big ball. Not a planet, but a spaceship. And that knowledge seems to be forbidden.
Natira and two women enter.
What happened?
We don't know. He just suddenly screamed in pain and died.
Fetch the guard.
One of the women puts down a tray of drinks and hurries out. Natira kneels.
Forgive him, for he was an old man. And old men are sometimes foolish. But it is written that those of the people who sin or speak evil shall be punished.
She bows her head, then gets to her feet. Two of the harlequined uniformed guards come in.
He served well for many years. Take him away, gently.
The guards do as they're told while the two women arrange the trays of food and drink they've brought with them on a table. Natira comes over to McCoy, who has sat back down, his hand to his head.
You do not seem well. It is distressing to me.
Oh, no, I'm quite all right, thank you.
It is the will of the Oracle that you now be treated as honored guests.
She goes over to the women at the table. Kirk smiles down at McCoy.
You seem to be the special favorite.
Indeed, Doctor. The young lady did show a marked preference for your company.
Well, now, nobody can blame her for that, can they?
Personally, I find the lady's taste questionable, but she obviously prefers you, and you obviously don't seem to mind. If you could arrange to be alone with the young lady, Spock and I would be left alone to find the power controls of this world.
Natira comes back.
It is time to refresh yourselves.
The women offer their trays. Spock passes a goblet to Kirk.
Thank you, Mr. Spock.
McCoy looks up at Natira as he passes her a drink.
To our good friends of Yonada.
We are very interested in your world.
That pleases us.
Good. Then you wouldn't mind if we looked around.
Not at all. The people know of you now. Are you well enough to go about?
McCoy looks up.
Perhaps not.
Then why not remain here? Rest. We will talk.
You are very kind.
You are free to go about and meet our people.
Thank you. And thank you for taking care of Dr. McCoy.
Not at all. We shall make him well.
She gazes at him with obvious approval.
Mr. Spock?
Kirk and Spock leave. One of the women offers McCoy some food from her tray.
Oh, thank you.
McCoy and Natira put down their drinks.
Leave us.
The women leave their trays and go.
I'm curious. How did the Oracle punish the old man?
I cannot tell you now.
There is some way the Oracle knows what you say, isn't there?
What we say, what we think. The Oracle knows the minds and the hearts of all the people.
McCoy puts a hand to his head. She sits beside him.
I did not know you would be hurt so badly.
Sorry. I suppose we had to learn the power of the Oracle.
McCoy, there is something I must say. Since the moment I...
They look deeply into each other's eyes. Natira lowers her gaze.
It is not in the manner of the people to hide their feelings.
Honesty is usually wise.
Is there a woman for you?
McCoy raises one eyebrow with a quizzical frown, considers, then almost smiles.
No, there isn't.
Does McCoy find me attractive?
Oh, yes. Yes, I do.
She looks away.
I hope you men of space, of other worlds, hold truth as dear as we do.
We do.
She smiles at him.
I wish you to stay here, on Yonada, as my mate.
McCoy's eyebrow shoots up again, this time more guardedly. He gets up off the couch and looks down at her. Natira's blue eyes look up at him with deep yearning.
But we're strangers to each other.
But is not that the nature of men and women? That the pleasure is in the learning of each other?
Yes.
Let the thought rest in your heart, McCoy.
Kirk and Spock stroll along the corridors. The inhabitants smile indulgently.
Incredible as it may seem, these people have no idea they're living on a spaceship.
I wonder how many generations have lived out their lives and been buried here without ever knowing that their world is hollow.
The people, in the fullness of time, will reach a new world, rich, green, lovely to the eyes, and of a goodness that will fill the hearts of the people with tears of joy. You can share that world with me, rule it by my side.
How long will it take you to reach this new world?
Soon. The Oracle will only say soon.
Oh, if you only knew how I needed some kind of future, Natira.
You have lived a lonely life?
Yes. Very lonely.
She smiles.
No more, McCoy.
And goes to him.
There will be no more loneliness for you.
There's something I need to tell you.
There is nothing you need to say.
But there is.
Then tell me, if the telling is such a need.
I have an illness for which there is no cure.
Her eyes become solemn.
I have 1 year to live.
She holds his gaze steadily, without a flicker of fear or misgiving.
Until I saw you, there was nothing in my heart. It sustained my life, but nothing more. Now it sings. I could be happy to have that feeling for a day, a week, a month, a year. Whatever the creators hold in store for us.
They gaze intently into each other's eyes. McCoy comes slowly towards Natira and kisses her. She puts an arm around his shoulder. He breaks from the kiss with a look of disbelief. Outside, Spock and Kirk continue their exploration. People in colorful outfits pass by.
Captain, the Oracle Room.
Kirk goes over to the door and looks at the triangular panels of hieroglyphs.
The problem, to get in.
I believe that I can...
Kirk silences him as a couple of inhabitants pass by.
The writing is definitely Fabrini, Captain. I recognize it.
Fabrini? Didn't the Fabrini sun go nova and destroy its planets?
Yes. Toward the end, the Fabrini people lived underground, as these people do, to protect themselves.
Some of them must have been put aboard this ship and sent to another planet. And these are their descendants. Now.
Spock passes his hand over two of the panels on either side of the doorway. The door slides open, and they slip inside. The doors close behind them. The room remains dim, and the light at the center of the star on the dark stone altar slab doesn't shine out.
The Oracle doesn't seem to know we're here.
They move further into the chamber.
I wonder what alerted it the first time.
Captain? If I remember correctly, the Oracle's reprehensible conduct was initiated when Natira knelt on that platform.
I think you're right. Continue investigating. The clue to the location of the control room must be around here somewhere.
Around the room are more triangular panels of hieroglyphs and large plinths of marble-like stone. Spock studies the writing on the panels.
Nothing here which would indicate this is anything but a planet.
Kirk looks at the Oracle slab. It remains lifeless. Spock comes over.
There's no question but that the creators would be considered gods.
Kirk goes over to one of the stone plinths and looks up at the markings.
This plaque is a representation of a star and its solar system.
Eight planets, Captain. That is the number in the Fabrina solar system.
And there's no doubt that these people are descendants of the Fabrini.
None. And no doubt that they've been in flight on this asteroid ship for 10,000 years.
The door starts to open. They hide behind the stone plinth as Natira comes into the room. She kneels on the pentagonal stone dais before the Oracle. The lights in the chamber brighten.
Speak.
It is I, Natira.
Yes, Natira.
It is written that only the High Priestess of the people may select her mate.
It is so written.
The strangers among us, the three visitors, there is one called McCoy. I wish him to remain here as my mate.
Does he agree to this?
I have asked him. He has not yet given me his answer.
He must become one of the people, worship the creators, and agree to the insertion of the instrument of obedience.
He will be told what must be done.
If he agrees to all things, it is permitted. Teach him our laws carefully so he commits no sacrilege, no offense against the people or the creators.
It will be done, O most wise.
She gets to her feet and goes to the door. As it opens, Kirk and Spock are suddenly hit by the force field. A green aura wreathes their bodies and they arch their backs in agony. Natira returns to the Pentagon.
Who are the intruders?
Surface strangers, Kirk and Spock.
McCoy is not with them?
No.
Kirk and Spock have committed sacrilege. You know what must be done.
I know.
Two guards rush in.
When the Oracle releases them, take them. Fools. You think we are children? You think you can do as you please, commit whatever offense amuses you?
Natira stands before a small altar in her private quarters and bows. McCoy comes in. She turns away.
What are you going to do to my friends?
They entered the Oracle room.
And the punishment is death?
Yes. I can make no other decision. We gave them our trust. They betrayed us.
They acted out of ignorance, Natira.
They said they came in friendship.
Please let them return to the ship.
I cannot.
He steps closer.
For me?
She looks up at him. He takes her gently by the shoulders.
I've made my decision. I'm staying here, on Yanara.
With a relieved sigh, she buries her head in his chest.
Natira, what they did because they felt they had to. Please let them return to the ship. You won't regret it. How do you think I'd feel if I stayed here with a chance to be happy for the first time in my life, but knowing my friends had died?
Yes.
She raises her eyes.
So be it. This I will do for McCoy. For our happiness and future.
She brings her hand to his lips and kisses it. Later, two guards have escorted Spock and Kirk up the cylindrical towers to the artificial planet's surface. McCoy joins them and dismisses the guards.
You're returning with us?
No, I'm not.
Bones, this isn't a planet, it's a spaceship on a collision course with Darren 5.
I'm on a kind of a collision course myself, Joe.
Dr. McCoy, I order you to return with us.
And I refuse.
Bones, if we can't correct the course of this ship, we'll have to blast it out of space.
I intend to stay on this ship with these people, whatever happens.
Your decision is most illogical, Doctor.
Is it, Mr. Spock? Is it really? The Tira's asked me to stay, and I'm staying.
As her husband?
Yes.
McCoy's expression softens.
Is that too much to ask, Jim?
Kirk to Enterprise.
Scott here, Captain.
We're beaming over. Lock in on our signal.
Aye, Captain.
Then transport Mr. Spock and myself immediately.
But, Captain, what about Dr. McCoy?
Kirk looks at McCoy. The two men hold each other's eyes, and McCoy solemnly backs away from Spock and Kirk with an air of absolute finality.
He's staying, Scotty. Kirk out.
Kirk and Spock dematerialize. As they vanish, a brief flicker of emotion passes across McCoy's stony face. Later, he kneels before the Oracle.
To become one of the people of Yonada, the instrument of obedience must be made part of your flesh. Do you now give your consent?
I do.
Proceed.
Neytiri, standing between McCoy and the Oracle, bows and approaches McCoy with a small object in her hand.
Say now, because once done, it is done.
Let it be done.
She presses both hands on McCoy's temples.
You are now one with my people.
She kneels beside him on the pentagonal dais, takes his hand, and looks into his eyes.
May I give you the love you want and make the time you have beautiful.
We are now of one mind.
One heart.
One life.
He puts one hand on the small of her back, the other on her stomach, leans over and kisses her gently on the lips. She turns and looks back at the Oracle.
It is done, O most wise, our living link with the creators.
Teach him then what he must know as one of the people.
She bows. As they get up from the pentagonal stone, the lights in the chamber dim. Neytiri takes McCoy over to the stone plinth that shows the Fabrina star system and its eight planets. Neytiri puts her hand onto the gold discs representing the planets. The top of the plinth rises to reveal a large book sitting underneath it.
This is the Book of the People, to be opened and read when we reach the new world of the promise. It was given by the creators.
Do the people know the contents of their book?
Only that it tells of our world here, and why, soon, one day, we must leave it for the new world.
Has the reason that the people must leave here been revealed to you?
No, it has not.
Don't you long to know its secrets?
No. It is enough for me to know that we shall understand all when we reach our home.
She gives him a solemn look.
Captain's log, stardate 5476.4. We are on a parallel course with Yonada. It is still on a collision course with Darren 5. Our failure to correct its course and the critical nature of Dr. McCoy's illness made the extraordinary event of contact with Starfleet Command imperative.
Captain Kirk, I sympathize with your wish to stay. But I hope you recognize the necessity that you continue your mission at once.
That is the problem, sir.
Perhaps I haven't made myself clear. Let me restate it. You have been relieved of all responsibility for the asteroid ship Yonada. Starfleet Command will take care of the situation.
Kirk, sitting at the desk in his quarters, turns off his desktop view screen and looks up at Spock.
I believe it is time to move on.
Yes, those are the orders.
Captain Kirk, bridge to Captain Kirk.
Kirk here.
An urgent call from Dr. McCoy, sir.
Put him on.
Jim!
Yes, Bones?
We may be able to get these people back on course.
You've located the controls?
No, but I've seen the book that contains all the knowledge of the creators. And if you...
He puts a hand to his temple and winces.
If you can get to it,
fuck.
Take out the information.
Where is it?
Oh!
Bones, are you all right?
Bones, answer me. Bones, what is it?
Natira hurries in and over to McCoy.
Bones, what is it?
McCoy presses his temple.
McCoy, what's happening? What's happening, McCoy?
McCoy's hand falls away. A red glow comes from under the skin on his temple. Natira holds McCoy's hand as he lies on the floor on his back. Kirk and Spock beam down into the room. She turns to them bitterly.
You are killers of your friend. I will have you put to death.
Help him.
Until you are dead, he will think of you and disobey. I will see you die.
Spock, take care, McCoy.
Kirk takes Natira roughly by her bare shoulders and pulls her to her feet. They watch as Spock applies a small device to the side of McCoy's head and removes the instrument of obedience. Spock puts the device into the bottom of his tricorder, turns on the tricorder scanner, and runs it over McCoy's body.
He is not part of our people. You've released him from his vow of obedience.
We have freed him from the cruelty of your oracle.
McCoy starts to come round.
Bones, you said something about a book. Where is it?
They must not know.
The Oracle Room.
You will never see the book. It is sacrilege. God! God! God!
Now listen to me. You must listen to what I have to say.
He pulls her aside.
Give me one moment to speak to you. One moment. Natira, if you don't believe what I'm about to tell you, you can call the guards. We'll accept any punishment you decree.
What do you wish to say?
You must believe that what I'm about to tell you is the truth.
Your truth? Of your world?
Yes, my world and your world of Yonava.
You do not obey the law of the creators. How can you understand my world?
I understand. I understand, Natira. 10,000 years ago, a sun was dying, and with it, its world. It's the world you see on the plaque in the room of the Oracle.
That is the world of which Yonava is a part.
No. It is the world of your ancestors, your creators. It no longer exists.
Her eyes widen.
You are mad.
No, I'm not. Now listen to me. Hear me out.
He releases her.
When your ancestors discovered that their world was dying, they built a great ship and chose their best people. They wished for their race to survive. They sent the ship out into space.
You wish me to believe that Yonada is a ship?
Yes.
But we have a sun. It did not die. And at night I see the stars.
No. You are living inside a hollow ball. Your ancestors created it to take you on a journey to a promised new planet.
She winces and puts a hand to her temple.
Why should the truth wait for you to come to Yonada?
Because a flaw developed in the controls, and unless we correct it, Yonada will kill millions of people and destroy a world it doesn't even know.
Why should the truth be kept from us? Why should the creators keep us in darkness? No. No. You do not speak the truth. I believe only the Oracle. I believe.
Let us remove the instrument of obedience the way we did for McCoy.
She stares wide-eyed. Natira runs to the door and slips out into the passageways.
Do you think she understood me?
Spock opens the door and looks up and down the passageway. There are no guards nearby. Several Yonandans acknowledge him as they pass by.
She evidently understood something. There are no guards to detain us.
You have listened to the words of the non-believers.
Yes, I have listened.
That was the first transgression. You felt the pain of warning,
Yes, I did.
Why did you listen further?
They said they spoke the truth.
Their truth.
Is truth not truth for all?
The truth of Yonada is your truth. There can be no other for you. Repent your disobedience.
I must know the truth of the world.
Pressing her fingers to her temples, she collapses and slips off the pentagonal dais. Kirk, Spock, and McCoy run in. McCoy runs over to Neytiri and cradles her head in his lap. Kirk and Spock crouch beside her. She looks up at McCoy.
Your friends have told me of your world.
They spoke the truth.
I believe you. I believe. The creators kept us in darkness. There's nothing I can do. I believe with you, husband.
McCoy holds out his hand to Spock and clicks his fingers. Spock passes him the small tubular device he used to remove the obedience implant from McCoy's temple. McCoy applies it to Neytiri's temple, gently removes her implant, and shows it to her. Her eyes close.
Is she all right?
She will be. I'll stay here with her. The book is in the monolith.
Kirk and Spock go towards it.
It is sacrilege to the temple.
We do this for the survival of the people of Yonada.
You are not believers. You are forbidden to gaze at the book.
We mean no desecration to the faith of Yonada. We must consult the book to help you.
It is blasphemy. You are forbidden. The punishment is death.
Wind blows through the chamber. Some of the hieroglyphs in the triangular panels on the wall begin to glow. The whole room fills with red light.
Temperature 111 degrees and rising.
McCoy, how do you open this thing?
Temperature 115 degrees.
Press the three lower planets on the left-hand side simultaneously.
120 degrees.
Kirk removes the book.
Yeah, the plan must be in there. Is it indexed?
Yes, it is.
Hurry, Spock.
Spock finds a page that shows the Fabrini solar system. He scans the writing.
It refers to the altar.
They hurry over to the oracle.
Apply pressure to the center until it opens.
Kirk presses the light at the center of the golden star. The entire stone altar glides out into the room, revealing a hatchway behind it that slides open. Spock climbs through and finds himself in a room full of blinking computers. He runs over to a control panel and presses a switch. Kirk crouches down beside McCoy.
Let's get her out of the heat.
I've neutralized the heating elements.
We'll be all right here now, Jim.
The red glow dims. Kirk rushes over to Spock as Neytiri comes around.
The Oracle can no longer punish us.
Your friends have prevented it?
Yes.
And will they send this ship again to the land the creators intended?
Yes.
That is good.
At the control desk.
Active and functional, not too different from the Enterprise.
There seems to be a weakness in one of the eight tubes.
Enough to turn it off course?
Yes. Let me check that engine.
Spock steps out from behind the control desk and runs up a flight of stairs in the corner of the room.
Very simple problem, easy to correct.
In the chamber, McCoy smiles down at Neytiri.
Then come.
They stand.
No.
Don't be afraid.
I do not fear the punishment of disobedience.
Well, then come. We must hurry to join.
No, I cannot go with you. It is not fear. I understand the great purpose of the creators. I shall honor it.
You intend to stay here, on Yonada?
I shall stay willingly. And because that is what I must do.
Then I won't leave you.
She looks at him lovingly.
Will McCoy stay here to die? No. McCoy will not let go of life in the fullness of years.
Now more than ever.
I wish to search through the universe to find a cure for myself and all others like me. And I want you to be with me.
She turns her eyes away, full of regret.
This is my universe. You came here with a great mission, to save my people. Shall I abandon them?
McCoy lowers his head. She puts a hand under his chin and tilts it up.
Perhaps one day, if it is permitted, you will find your Nada again.
She buries her head on his shoulder. Spock comes back to the control desk.
I believe we can attempt the course correction, Captain.
Good.
Kirk turns round and checks a panel of winking lights on the wall at his back.
Going back to mark headings.
Guidance controls taking over. I believe we can allow the ship to go back to its automatic control.
Steadying on course, marked in red.
He goes back towards the hatch to the chamber.
Captain, intelligence files. Their banks contain the total knowledge of the Fabrini, ready for the people to consult when they arrive at their destination. And they seem to have amassed a great deal of medical knowledge.
Later in sickbay, McCoy lies on the diagnostic bed. Kirk watches. At Spock's signal, Nurse Chapel applies a hyperspray to McCoy's neck. Nurse Chapel looks up at the biomonitor. McCoy's readings start to return to normal.
Excellent, Doctor. The white corpuscle count is back to normal.
Oh.
McCoy opens his eyes. Spock switches off his scanner.
Your hemoglobin count is back to normal, Doctor, which indicates that the flow of oxygen to each cell of your body is back up to its abundantly energetic level.
Thank you, Mr. Spock, for bringing back the knowledge of the Fabrini.
Dr. McCoy, the Fabrini descendants are scheduled to debark on their promised planet in approximately 390 days. I think that we could manage to be in that vicinity at that time, if you wanted to thank the Fabrini personally.
McCoy gives Kirk a crooked smile. This audio description was written and produced at IMS for the Sci-Fi Channel.